Resources to order today. Since we scheduled this day, we realize now that we have to be over by about 3:50 because we have a floor session at 4 o'clock, so we only have an hour. So our goal is to try to get through as much testimony as we can because I know people have come from a long ways away. We are not planning on having any work sessions today. We're just going to move through the testimony stuff, and then we can do work sessions at another time, just so we can try to get everybody on. So knowing that, try to keep your testimony. If you have written, we'd love you to just paraphrase. We will have more time with each of these bills at some other time. But I know that people travel, and it's best to get through. So we'll start right off on just down the list. So we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 134A. And short description.
Mr. Chair, members, Senate Bill 134A authorizes the Veterinary Medical Examining Board to inspect certain premises and order examinations during the course of an investigation of an applicant or licensee. There is no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
And we have a number of people who have come to testify. And just so just to mention, so people who aren't here, if you're over 100 miles, we usually give you first. None on this list, but I anticipate we may have some. So, Emilio, is it DeBese from DVM?
DeBese.
DeBese, okay. Come on up. And Lori Makinen, thank you. We'll have both of you come up first and take some testimony. Yeah, I did, yeah.
Oh.
3:50, I think, is what we're going to go to.
Oh, okay.
And Laura Smith, you might as well come up, too. And we'll get all those people who are for this bill. And you can begin.
Okay. Thank you.
We should have... Tell who you are when
yes.
you...
Yes. Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Lori Makinen, Director of the Veterinary Examining Board. Thank you for hearing our bill today. Basically, what this bill does is it gives the board authority to inspect facilities if we have a complaint about facility conditions and to direct a licensee to undergo a competency evaluation if we have evidence of physical or mental incompetence or chemical dependency. The reason that we need this authorization is we do have cases where we have questions about licensees' competence. We also have cases where facilities are substandard in any number of ways, and we do have rules that require facilities to maintain minimum standards, but we don't have the statutory authority to enforce those rules. So Senate Bill 134 gives us that authority, and as well, as I said, gives us the authority to investigate suspected incompetence.
Yeah. Thank you.
It's pretty short.
Yep.
Hi, I'm Dr. DeBese. I'm the chair of the licensing board, and I'm in support of the bill. That's pretty much it.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Laura Smith with Day Barrows and Associates, and I'm here today representing the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association. As the licensing agency for veterinarians in the state, the board is charged with protecting the public by upholding minimum standards for veterinary care here in Oregon. We feel that Senate Bill 134A provides them the needed tools to uphold those standards, and we stand in full support of the bill and hope you will too. Thank you for your time today, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Yes, questions for this group. Representative
yes.
Maurer.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And as we're going to hear, there is some opposition to this bill, and I think it's a procedural opposition, not a fundamental core opposition. Have you had a chance to discuss this issue? And I'm waiting to hear more.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, we've seen the proposed amendments from Ms. Krem. Those amendments were rejected by the Senate committee. We think that the amendments, while procedurally interesting, do nothing to help us to protect the public and, in fact, would give a licensee an additional at least 21 days to practice before we would be able to do anything about them if they were practicing dangerous.
So,
yes,
follow up to that.
Yeah.
So, I guess I'm going to ask the next question to Ms. Krim, but so if you're saying that the 21-day window, which is what you've just explained to me or to us, is unacceptable?
Mr. Chair, Representative Maurer, in the case where we feel or suspect or have sufficient evidence to believe that a licensee needs to be evaluated to determine whether or not he or she is competent to safely practice, then 21 days could be serious, yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Maurer, on behalf of the association, I'd like to put it on the record that we did see the amendments on the Senate side. I haven't seen anything over here on the House side, but those amendments that we saw on the Senate side were not acceptable to the association, and the association supports Senate Bill 134 as is. We worked with the board on the Senate side to reach an agreement on Senate Bill 134A, and we feel that it does give the board the tools they need to get the job done, and the association is very much in support of those and is not in support of the amendments as they were on the Senate side.
Okay. Any further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Janice Krim.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Janice Krim. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon State Bar's Administrative Law Section. I think from the previous questions, it should be clear that it's not that the Administrative Law Section dislikes the idea of having an increase in their authority, the Veterinary Board's authority, to regulate licensees in particular, but this bill has some problems, and it's on because of the procedural problems that we are opposing it and have recommended some amendments that were authorized by Representative Bonamici. Let me tell you just very quickly about the Oregon State Bar's Administrative Law Section. We are basically attorneys who represent state agencies. We're people who represent private citizens, and we also have administrative law judges. My background is as an administrative law judge, and I'm now in practicing in private practice. When the section proposes something, it's got to be some kind of a compromise between the people in our committees who represent the citizen and the members of our organization who represent public agencies. And we take into account both sides of that spectrum when we come before you with these suggestions. This bill has basically two problems. The first problem is the standard that is used before the board can actually order somebody to have an invasive and expensive examination. Basically, if you look at the language in the bill, it says it's basically an any evidence test. That is an extremely low standard. That means that they don't weigh it against anything else. It doesn't have to be the preponderance of the evidence. It doesn't have to be clear and convincing evidence. They just need any evidence that suggests to them that this person would be unsafe. Also, once somebody is ordered to undergo this kind of an examination, the section is very concerned that this is a final order that goes into effect immediately. And under administrative law practices, generally speaking, when you have something that has this kind of a huge impact on a person's ability to work and to maintain their career, there's usually an opportunity for a hearing. And the amendments that you see will give people an opportunity to request a hearing. And it also would give them an opportunity to see, by a particular notice, a short and plain statement of what the basis is for this order. Senate Bill 134 basically puts the cart before the horse. It basically says, first we order you to do it, and then, if you don't like it, you can appeal this to the circuit court. This is an extremely expensive way to run an administrative process. It means that both the licensee and the agency has to then have an attorney represent them in a circuit court proceeding. I'm sure you can use your own judgment, but at a circuit court proceeding is significantly more expensive than an administrative hearing. My background as an administrative law judge, I can assure you that an administrative hearing that's limited to very specific issues and not a wide array of issues, but a very specific issue, can be quickly and cheaply provided prior to the effective date that this kind of an invasive experience can happen. Now, we did listen closely to some of the things that the agencies had to say. They said that they wanted to have it fast, and so we tried to put in a short time frame for requesting a hearing. We would also be willing to ensure that there's an expedited hearing process, and I have on more than one occasion talked to the Office of Administrative Hearings, which is run by Tom Ewing, who has been more than generous in explaining to us that if it's required to have a speedy hearing, that those kinds of hearings can be expedited if we needed to do that. We also made sure there was an exception in this bill for two things. One, any kind of a controlled substance problem that you would need a quick turnaround. There wouldn't be time. It would be something that could disappear quickly. That is an exception from the hearing requirements. So if your mind is going to the little cup and the blood test, those sorts of things are exempted from the need for a pre-hearing before they can issue this kind of an invasive order. Also, the other thing that we want to make it very clear that's accepted from this bill is the ability for an agency, when they have evidence that there is a danger, a safety issue, there is already in statute, it's called an emergency suspension statute, that still would be available to them. The problem with this bill, in a nutshell, is this casts a huge net in their ability to deal with problem veterinarians. And they're basically hauling in not just the tuna, but a whole array of people who should have an opportunity before they have to engage in an expensive, invasive, career-damaging experience. They should have an opportunity for a quick, inexpensive hearing. Our position is agencies need to have adequate checks and balances on this kind of a authority, and we want to make it as inexpensive as possible rather than an expensive circuit court appeal. Thank you. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions for this witness? Representative Maurer.
Okay. Under the language as the bill is currently written, if I call the state board because I don't tell them who I am, I make an anonymous call, and I make an allegation against a veterinarian under the proposed procedures that there essentially is no evidentiary level that they have to rise to. They can come down and close you down in a heartbeat.
Well, according to the language in the Senate Bill 134, the gross version, it says it's they have evidence that suggested to them that you're not a safe practitioner. So, yeah, the standard, I mean, that's our concern. It's incredibly low. That's why we suggested a standard where there has to be reasonably objective evidence and that there be a clear, that is also connected to your actual ability to be a veterinarian, because people can suggest that you do all sorts of things that may not, in fact, have any bearing on your ability to treat animals effectively and appropriately. One of the things that I would like to point out is, and one of the reasons that we're trying to get some language, is that there are two other bills that give two other agencies similar authority. One of them is Senate Bill 207, the other bill is Senate Bill 229, and they all have different standards, they all have different procedures. Each agency has sort of taken on their own approach to when and how they're going to give these exams. So I wanted to just point that out so that you could see that we're trying to get a little uniformity. Not only are we trying to put a standard in there that's more workable and more sensible, but we also want to put in there some procedures that would be more uniform for boards that want to exercise this kind of special authority.
Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Cram, and I want to welcome her to our hearing room, because Ms. Cram has been a constituent of mine, and has been a great source of information to me on administrative law matters in the past. I'm trying to understand the structure of the proposed amendment. Under the A.M. Gross version of the bill, there are two new authorities being added. One is an inspection authority in G, and then an order for an examination, that is mental, physical, or competency examination. And what I'm reading the -A2 amendments to do is to require, in effect, create a contested case procedure before such an examination could be required. And that would all be in advance, I think, of when there would actually be a revocation of a person's license. And the license revocation would involve these procedural protections, I'm assuming, right?
Not exactly. Oh, Mr. Chair, excuse me.
No problem.
Representative McPherson, that's not exactly true, because the way the administrative law section works, Procedures Act works, the order to get the exam is not part of a contested case hearing process. The order would go out. It would be a final order in other than a contested case. It's gone. It's decided that if you fail to do it, they can discipline you for doing it in a separate disciplinary process. When you go to hearing on the discipline that they want to do to you, you do not get to object to your having to have had a mental exam. That's done. That's gone. It's over. That it wouldn't be part of what would be reviewed during any disciplinary process. You don't get to challenge the adequacy of the order, the basis for the order.
I couldn't follow up, but you have the right to challenge the results of the examination.
Yeah, let me give you an exactly. Oh, excuse me, Mr. Chair.
No problem. It's okay.
Exactly, but this is the distinction. I was talking to a practitioner. The Board of Medical Examiners does this. They ordered their client to go off and get an exam, which is extremely expensive and time-consuming. People who represent these clients generally don't say to them, oh, go to circuit court, because this is an open hearing, and the mere accusation that you're a Looney Tune or something worse is enough to really have a career damaging experience. So most attorneys simply counsel them, go off and do it, pay the money, miss your work, come back with good results. This then was introduced into evidence at the hearing. It was irrelevant to the issues in the hearing. The doctor won at the hearing. This information is now introduced into the hearing record. It was irrelevant, but the fact is this person still had to undergo the exam. It was introduced into hearing. It's the process puts extremely invasive things that you have no way of stopping. You cannot afford to challenge this. If you were someone who's in a custody dispute and a disgruntled household member, maybe your soon-to-be ex-spouse, wants to allege that you're mentally ill, that you have some kind of a disturbance, you now have a board order that says you are now subject to a mandatory exam. This is a problem, we feel.
If there were someone who was not practicing competently, we'll just assume that that's the case, the effect of the A2 amendments would be to, in effect, to have two levels of hearing, if I'm tracking it right. That is, first, to determine whether an examination will be done to see whether they are competent, and then once the results of that that hearing determines that yes, there are problems with the way they practice, and then the board would then act on that evidence to revoke their license. And I'm gathering that would be a separate then opportunity to challenge that action. So there would be sort of two bites at the apple for the licensee, and the point that you're making, I think, is that the first tier, that is submitting to an examination, whether it's a mental examination, physical, or competency examination, is so invasive that they shouldn't be put to that burden unless they go through this initial hearing process. Have I summarized that?
Representative McPherson, absolutely.
Okay.
There's two orders. There are two different kinds of orders. You know, the Administrative Procedures Act sets up a criteria that says under these circumstances you get a contested case hearing, and under these circumstances you don't, and you have to go to circuit court. Well, currently there's a bill that would take something out of the contested case process because, and the section is not opposing that, because some things get included in contested cases that shouldn't be, and in this case something is excluded from a contested case hearing, i.e. the ability to order an exam. Two orders, two processes, both of them are so important and have such a huge impact on a licensee or an applicant. I mean, one of the problems that we have is that agencies already have a huge amount of authority. People who commit crimes, the authority that agencies have to pursue people is extremely comprehensive. I think that's a very fair way of describing it. To say now that they have some inkling on the barest of evidence, and they really don't have any other statutory authority or any other rule that would allow them to pursue an investigation of this person, we think is sort of misrepresents the current level of capabilities that agencies have.
I don't want to monopolize the discussion.
We're not going to work this today. So
okay.
I would hope that you can get some more answers and we can follow up.
Let's just do it offline. That'd be great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else here that came to testify on Senate Bill 134A? Seeing no one, we're going to close our public hearing on Senate Bill 134A. 236A. And we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 236A. Yes. So we'll hear a short description, and then we have some people to speak.
Mr. Chair, members, Senate Bill 236A would create a voluntary lifetime brand inspection for Equiday. The bill expands authority of the Department of Agriculture to collect brand inspection fees and removes the brand inspection certification requirements for livestock other than cattle. There is no revenue impact. There is a fiscal impact statement which should be attached to the staff measure summary in front of you.
Okay. And so let's have Lisa Hansen, Roger Huffman from ODA. Who's that? Must be another one.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Lisa Hansen, Deputy Director with the Department of Agriculture. Thank you for the opportunity to visit with you about Senate Bill 236A and Gross. This is an agency bill that amends one of the oldest programs in the Department of Agriculture, the Brand Inspection Program. It's just a quick overview. The amendments will remove the mandatory brand inspection for horses. It increases the cap for charging fees for brand inspection and the inspection of hides, and also authorizes a maximum travel or service fee of $25. Over a year ago, it became clear that the brand inspection program was headed for financial difficulty. They had a declining fund balance. And the agency pulled together a work group that's been meeting regularly since, I think, the fall of 2005. That work group is made up of industry representation from the different sectors that are served by the brand inspection program. Ultimately, what you see before you encompasses many of the recommendations that came out of that, that work group. And I think an important part of this is this bill provides a relatively short-term fix to a financial program in the brand inspection for the brand inspection program. And longer term, it will require for that program to stay viable additional work with the industry and the users of this service to determine ultimately what needs to happen with the program in terms of size and scale and potentially additional fees. And so, again, what you see before you is an initial fix to address a financial crisis that the brand inspection program is in. And with that, that's the high-level overview. Roger Huffman is the manager of our brands program, and we would be happy to answer any questions or walk you through the bill. The choice would be up to you.
Do you want to say a few words to begin with?
Chair Roblin, no, I think Lisa covered it quite well.
Okay. So, questions?
You want to walk? I just I'm looking through because I actually have quite a few letters in here.
I know. Somewhere.
And about just the fee increases, and you can maybe walk us through. And has there been any, were there any concerns raised in the Senate on the fee increases?
On the Senate side, there was an amendment to charge up to $25 for the
travel fee, correct?
Service.
Yeah, the service fee. And that was an up to that we had said we would look at in the rulemaking process to cover the travel costs. That was probably the issue, I believe, that brought the most discussion on the Senate side. I mean, over the last year, as we've worked through this fee increase issue, there are a lot of differing perspectives of how the fee should be set. And one of the things the agency has done is to look at where the costs are being generated and trying to find a way to equitably distribute those costs. And unfortunately, in some cases, smaller operators end up having higher costs than they might have had with a blanket fee. And there are still multiple scenarios as we look into the rulemaking process that may be used to address getting to the dollar amount that this bill supports in the governor's recommended budget.
And just a quick follow-up as far as, and I apologize, I'm just looking at this, the LFO report for the first time. As far as covering the cost of implementing the program, how do these, the fee increase, I mean, what percentage of the program cost does it cover? Do you know?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, this program is solely supported by fees.
So there's no general fund,
there's
no other
general
funds.
Fund in the grant. It's all other funded by fees in the brand inspection program.
Okay. That answers that question. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a quick question. Why would they be declining revenues in this program?
Can you repeat the question? I couldn't hear.
Why was there declining revenues in that program?
Chair Roblin, I'm Roger Huffman, Program Manager from the Oregon Department of Ag. Representative Smith, there's multiple reasons, but as a general, I guess the highest level is that if you look back historically, my history is from the mid-80s anyway, statistically we varied in inspection of animals, of cattle, for example, from 1.1 to 1.25 million per year, and it kind of in cycles. Well, due to many factors, but, you know, there just is less producers, less cattle in the state, and it appears that long-term, we had long discussions today about this with industry as well, the number of cattle that we inspect is just barely over 1 million the last couple of years, and our projections, we project it will continue to go down. Just the space, places to run them, the profitability, there's just a lot of reasons why there's less numbers, but that's the bottom line, is there's less cattle inspected.
Okay. Okay. Let me ask the following questions, and it's kind of a longer one, so I have it partly written out. And we've heard that we really need to pass the bill, because there's no doubt you need some money to run the program, and it doesn't get run without it. And I think all the people out there who are running cattle and farms all want that to happen, and ODA's had a good reputation in doing those things. But there does seem to be a lack of consensus as to what amount of fees should be, and there appears to be significant concern among different segments, whether it's the beef or the dairy or the beef producers or the auction yards. All of them have their own set of concerns that differ, and each one is concerned about how the fee is going to affect them, which is typical of any of these fee issues. So one of the thoughts was about adding a sunset to the bill, so we look at it every 2 years or whatever. But I have always been of the with agriculture that you do that. You try to keep working it out. So I guess what I want to hear is that if we don't want to do a sunset kind of thing, can you assure us that you're going to move cautiously? And as you have in so many other kinds of things that you've done, you'll try to get consensus from the industry. And then I'm willing to move this on. But and the other part is, we'd really like you to come back in 2009 and let us know where it's at, because I think that this is one of those things that has to happen. The fees have to be charged. We've got to do all that kind of stuff. But I think there are real anxious people out there right now wanting to know, because almost all of our ag issues come down to people want to be able to make a profit and keep doing it. And I have not found anybody that doesn't, who is a farmer, that doesn't want to keep farming. But these fees and other kinds of things, eventually those marginal guys, we end up having fewer cattle and fewer other things because they can't make it. So I guess that's my question.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, this is an industry program. And I think in saying that, we are committed to continuing to work with the industry to evolve the program, change the program to meet their needs over time. And I think in that, that is a continuing evaluation of the costs of providing the service, as well as the service that is being provided, to determine if that service really is meeting the needs of the industry or how else it could be provided that gives people the assurances that they need that the cattle that are presented are actually owned by the appropriate people. So with that, we are committed to doing that on an ongoing basis.
And if we called you back in 2009, you wouldn't have a problem telling us where you are.
We would be happy to come back and visit with you in 2009 okay. and tell you right. where we're at and what we have done.
Okay. Representative Clem.
One question out of curiosity. Is there a lot of branding that goes on in the, not cattle, but the horses and mules and the other word that I'm not going to say out loud, actually?
Chair Roblin and Representative Clem. Yes, clearly branding, the branding of animals is, there's quite a variation across the state. The further west you go, this northwest corner, there's very small amount of livestock or branded cattle and horses. And the further east you go, because of the open range and turning them out for the summer and maybe not seeing them in the mixing of other people's cattle, it's in the high 90% of animals.
Separate from cattle, too? Or not cows, but the other, the equidae or whatever.
Equidae.
Yeah,
basically, the equine species. Again, it's the further east you go, the more percentage of brands. And of the little over 11,000 brands we have recorded, over 1,500 of those are recorded for brands on horses. Hmm. And there are some sheep brands as well recorded.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So next we have Dave Nelson and Coy. Is it Cowart?
Cowart.
Cowart. Okay. There it is. It's exactly right.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Dave Nelson representing the Oregon Dairy Farmers Association. And, of course, most of the dairy cattle in the state aren't funded. And I think with we support the bill and support passage of the bill. As the chair described to you, there is some anxiety out among various sets of livestock producers. And I was very, very heartened by Lisa Hansen's response and the chair's comments. Beauty is always in the eye of the beholder. You know, what's fair is fair, and what's fair is if you can get the guy behind the tree, you know, to pay the bill, well, that's always the best way to do it. The per head fee, the Section 3 is where the gist of the whole issue is, and that is some fees are established in statute, some fees are left to the department to establish by rule. And the head fee or the fee per animal has been 75 cents for a long time. The department certainly needs more money than that, and we support that need. We just don't want it to wind up to be 50 cents for some and a dollar for others. And so that's, I think that the committee and the department can work that out. And with Lisa's commitment, I think we can arrive at a very equitable fee. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Coy Cowart, and I'm the owner of Lebanon Auction Yard, past president of the Oregon Cattlemen Association. The reason I'm testifying this afternoon, I first of all like to thank you very much for listening to me. I purchased my business 20 years ago this fall. It was the smallest in the state, and there was 19 to 21 of them in the state auction yards. Right now there's 9 left in 20 years, and the west side of the mountain seems to be the area that we're losing the most cattle. There's 50 to 75,000 head of cattle less now in the Willamette Valley than there was 20 years ago. So the fees keep going up, 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 and we understand that, and I want to support the bill. I don't want a misunderstanding. I support the bill. Roger Huffman and the Department of Ag have done a marvelous job. And you know, I can remember when Roger Huffman wasn't here, and it was in terrible shape. So they've done a tremendous job, and I support them all the way. However, there is only three auction yards left in western Oregon, me being one of them, and there was nine of them when I bought my business. So you see, we're going out every day, every day, every day. And my customers happen to be the little guy, the 4-H, the FFA, the dairyman, the folks that don't brand their cattle. And normally they don't. So I rise in opposition when we're going to charge those folks more money, for instance, than we would a large producer that has 1,000 or 10,000 head. Now, I understand that it costs more money to come to my place. In fact, about $250, $300 a week expenses to come to my auction yard one time, and it doesn't cost near that much to go take care of 10,000 head. But the point is, if we lose another 50,000 head of cattle in Willamette Valley, we won't have any. And most of these people are the marginal operators, I think, in any ag field. The little guy with a little family with five head is the marginal operator, but he's also the person who keeps the cost down because he's got a whole bunch of family members helping him do this. So I want to support the bill again, but I would just like for you guys, as David said, to do what you've already done. You've done a real good job already, and I commend you for it because you knew what was going on and what's happening and everything. And I just want you to be sure that you follow up, because I know at one time before we came and asked for some money and we got $125,000 to do a study to find out if it was feasible to have a slaughter facilities in the state of Oregon. And I believe it was this committee that appropriated the money. And we got the money and we did the feasibility test and nothing happened, and only one guy got the knowledge of the information. So what happened was the committee didn't pay attention to what happened after they appropriated the money. And I just love to prey upon you to somehow watch it after it becomes a bill. Thank you very much. I'll answer any questions if you have any.
Any questions? Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, actually it's a comment. My family has been a small operator of cattle for decades in Illinois Valley, Grants Pass area, and that these issues, these fees, because it's not about making money, because they lose money, they just do it slowly. And so they do it because it's about culture and it's about history and family, and we continue to do it. And so what I don't want to lose sight of is the fact that the large operators do it because it is actually financially feasible for them to continue. But these small people don't do it for that. They do it for other reasons. And I don't want to create a situation where we drive these people out of business, not really business, but out of a hobby. And so, you know, if the small operators are supportive, then I'm going to be supportive.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you both.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
We also have Glenn, is it Bassett?
Barrett.
Barrett, it's ours, okay. Jim Welch and Don Kessie.
Mr. Chair, I'm Glenn Barrett, and I have an operation down in the Klamath Basin. I run feeder cattle where I buy calves from probably Representative Maurer's family, and I background them, and then I feed them out in feedlots. I am in support of this bill, and I'm also on the advisory committee, just newly elected to that. And I think your concerns, Mr. Chair, is adequate on and essential and needed to come back and revisit this to see if once we put this in place, what's a long-term fix. I think the way we've done business in the past and the change of our environment needs to look at this overall brand program and look at some really innovative ways to keep it reflective of what we do in business in today and make it more modern. So I am a supporter of this bill. I'm glad that the concerns have been brought up to see how we follow up with it. And as a cattle producer, I'm committed to work with the Department of Ag. I've met with them this morning, and I think that we're all on the same page, and we're committed to work together for a long-term plan. So I really hope we come back with a new legislative issue and plan in 09 and address your committee again and say, this is a coalition idea, that this is how we change things. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Donald Cassie here, and I am a livestock producer in Western Oregon. I run about 75 head of mother cows, and I do a number of other things, involved in the timber industry as well. I'm chairman of the Lynn County Livestock Association. Lived there all my life. Kind of grew up around natural resources, and I support this measure. This is a program that the industry needs, the livestock industry, for a number of different reasons. I've also served on the advisory committee that helped advise the department in what to do in the wake of failing finances for the program. And in my estimation, there's been a real desire on the part of all the committee members to try to come to consensus on what would work under the present guidelines to be a short-term fix. And there's also been a lot of verbal, at least, commitment on the part of the committee members to work towards a more long-term solution for it. So from that perspective, I just want you to know that I'm in favor of this bill.
Thank you very much.
Chair Roland, committee members, Jim Welsh, lobbyist for the Oregon Cattlemen, and I just wanted to kind of take you just ahead of this work group effort, go into a little bit of just our policy, because what we were concerned about, some of that has been certainly addressed today, and we have worked very closely with the Department of Agriculture and had numerous, Don has been a part of this brand advisory group, and numerous conference calls, and I think a couple meetings here in Salem, working very closely with a department that I think has certainly our best interests at hand. But we want to make sure that, you know, on record, that we have some things that certainly will be addressed. Some of them have already been addressed, but I think some of the policy statements are very important. Going into this, the cattlemen did not believe there had been sufficient study completed for the Oregon Department of Agriculture Brand Advisory Group. And they did not agree or recommend adoption necessarily of that $25 blanket travel fee. But as they worked through, we were able to apply the amendments that you see within the bill now over on the Senate side. Those are recommended by the Oregon Cattlemen Association. And we worked very hard to placate members as we did that. But we always heard what you're going to hear here in our policy, the concerns that we will continue to work and develop for within that long-term plan, okay? And the cattlemen believe that the brand department's functions are very important and that this bill needs to go forward. That they resolve that for sure. And they also want the group to research a more equitable approach to their brand fees, including variables such as volume, district costs, and branded cattle versus non-branded cattle, and that the group should research cost fairness of prorated travel fees such as a fee waived after the first 60 head, and that the brand department pursue funding for enforcement of ORS 607 as mandated, or they remove the department from responsibility for investigating and processing stray animals and determining adequacy offenses. Now, during the deliberations on the Department of Agriculture's budget, we were over there to ask the Natural Resource Ways and Means committee that they would provide $30,000 within that a stray animal issue so that we could further fund those efforts, which they're falling short on financially within the department. So we have asked and participated there also, Mr. Chair. And we ask that the group research the fairness and cost savings of the California-type paperwork at the auction yards. And this this means that the receipt also is the brand paper, okay? And lastly, that the group research a different fee structure for pasture-to-pasture or pasture-to-feedlot movement where no ownership changes take place. So those things have been addressed, and we believe that we've worked through a number of those, but I think it's important to have it on the record so we can always come back to the record and say, you know, have we done this, and have these things been addressed? And I look forward to working with the department because it's been certainly a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? I will make a comment that Lisa was back there scribbling notes as you were speaking. So, as usual, the ODA is always trying to figure out where they're supposed to be going. So I do appreciate what they have done in a number of these issues, especially all the fee-driven issues and making sure that they work with people as much as they can. And I think it's shown here when they come to the committees that even though people don't always agree with where it's at, they're almost always in agreement that this is what we need to do. So that is appreciated, and I will commend them to continue to do that as well. Any other questions from the people here? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
So we're going to... Oh, is there anyone else here that wanted to speak to 236? Senate Bill 236. Seeing none, we're going to close the public hearing. And the other question I was going to ask, we have a couple other bills that were up. We're not going to have time because we have a 4 o'clock session, but is there anybody here who can't make it back to the next session? We're going to push these forward, maybe over 100 miles, that kind of stuff. I didn't see anybody on the list that was planning on speaking. Seeing none, that's appreciated. If you have any written testimony and you don't plan on being back the next time, if you leave it with our staff, committee staff, they will make sure that we get it for the next meeting. And with that, anything else to come in?
We're going to do a work session on this last
time? Not right now.
Okay.
We'll do it the next one. We'll do it quickly. I just didn't want to. So we'll move it probably on, and we'll put both of these forward for the next week so we can do some work sessions. But so we'll get them going quickly. Thank you very much. We're going to close our meeting Ag and Natural Resources.
Is there a referral on that one?
Sure. Yeah.